Let's start what we have come into the room to do. Right on. Here goes.
Hello, Ann Arbor and the world. This is WCBN, and we are It's Hot in Here. I am joined by my co-host, Dania Gutierrez.
That's right.
Pearl Zung. The lovely Dr. Rebecca Harden. And we have a special guest in the studio as well, Jennifer Carman? Carman?
Carmen.
Great. We have a great show coming up, and which we'll be talking to folks from the USGBC and especially talking about their Green Apple Day of Service, which Dania will tell us all about. But first, I wanted to open the show with a poem performed by Kathy Jetnell Kilgner, I believe is her name. She's from the Marshall Islands, and she was one of the poems selected to open the UN Climate Leader Summit this last week, and I'll just let you guys hear for yourself. It's quite beautiful.
Dear Mata Filipino, I want to tell you about that lagoon, that lazy lounging lagoon, lounging against the sunrise. Men say that one day that lagoon will devour you. They say it will gnaw at the shoreline, chew at the roots of your breadfruit trees, gulp down rows of seawalls, and crunch through your island's shattered bones. They say you, your daughter, and your granddaughter too, will wander rootless with only a passport to call home. Dear Mata Filipino, don't cry. Mommy promises you no one will come and devour you. No greedy whale of a company sharking through political seas. No backwater bullying of businesses with broken morals. No blindfolded bureaucracies gonna push this mother ocean over the edge. No one's drowning, baby. No one's moving. No one's losing their homeland. No one's becoming a climate change refugee. Or should I say, no one else? To the Carteret Islanders of Papua New Guinea and to the Taro Islanders of Fiji, I take this moment to apologize to you. We are drawing the line here because we, baby, are going to fight. Your mommy, daddy, boo-boo, jima, your country, and your president too, we will all fight. And even though there are those hidden behind platinum titles who like to pretend that we don't exist, who like to pretend that the Marshall Islands, Tuvalu, Kiribati, Maldives, Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, floods of Algeria, Colombia, Pakistan, and all the hurricanes, earthquakes, and tidal waves didn't exist? Still, there are those who see us. Hands reaching out, fists raising up, banners unfurling, megaphones booming, and we are canoes blocking coal ships. We are the radiance of solar villages. We are the fresh, clean soil of the farmers' past. We are teenagers, blooming petitions. We are families, biking, recycling, reusing, engineers, building, dreaming, designing, artists, painting, dancing, writing, and we are spreading the word. And there are thousands out on the streets, marching hand in hand, chanting for change now. And they're marching for you, baby. They're marching for us because we deserve to do more than just survive. We deserve to thrive. Dear Mata Filipino, you are eyes heavy with drowsy weight. So just close those eyes and sleep in peace. Because we won't let you down. You'll see.
So yeah, that beautiful, beautiful poem was written by a 26-year-old poet from the Marshall Islands, and it was written to her 7-month-old baby. And as you guys heard throughout the poem, she's essentially saying that the lagoon that will devour you is not going to be allowed to happen, that, you know, they're gonna act. And I thought it was quite touching, quite beautiful.
It's beautiful.
It's a pretty amazing poem, and her work is pretty amazing. She has founded an environmental NGO on these issues, is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. It's called Jojikum, and it educates the youth of the Marshall Islands about issues related to environmentalism and climate change.
Fantastic. What a way to open our weekly show, It's Hot in Here, the Mixed Talk and Music Environment Show. Well, I guess this week, Mixed Talk, Music, and Poetry, actually.
Yeah.
Right here at home on WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, 88.3. Don't touch that dial, because not only are we talking about the high points of the climate summit and march in the city last week, but we're also talking about things going on here in our own city, Detroit, around green building and green schools and a Green Apple Day of Service project in the Detroit area. So we really are excited about all of that to come. And I just want to shout out to the students and others in our SNRE community who went and traveled to be in the climate march. We had some who took that long 19-hour bus ride just to be present with the student section in that march and came back really full of energy and information and a sense of the alliances that are being formed across generations and identities on this climate issue right now. Brittany Anstead, who was actually in the CBN studio last April talking about the powwow and about Native American environmental politics, went and turned out and came back full of real impressed hope around the alliances across the Canadian and U.S. borders and other borders among Native Americans and tribal institutions about this climate change issue. And I think it was just been a week with enormous positive energy around our school, around this campus, and in our country on these issues. What do you guys think?
Absolutely. I definitely think this has been one way of uniting us all, which is really, really exciting.
On a positive note as well. I mean, obviously, a lot of really dire things were being spoken about at the summit, but ultimately, it was about action. And so, switching gears a little bit, related to people who are taking really positive action, we are going to be hearing, and I believe have on the phone right now, somebody from the USGBC. Which, Danya, can you tell us a little bit about what the USGBC is?
Yeah. So USGBC stands for the U.S. Green Building Council. And if you've ever seen one of those fancy schmancy LEED certified buildings, they're the ones that are in charge of that. But Peggy Mata, who we're going to be hearing from soon, is the Green Schools Chair at the Detroit chapter of the U.S. Green Building Council.
I think that'll be a great opportunity to hear about what's going on the ground and to ask a few questions from a call-in. We've been getting more and more call-ins as this show's gone on from community members and people working within the state of Michigan on various initiatives, and it's really gives the show a very dynamic feel. So I want to just go ahead and take that call if we can. Hi, Peggy.
Hi. How are you doing?
Hey, really Peggy. Good. Great to hear from you.
Great to be with you.
So, Peggy, like I mentioned, you are a part of the Detroit chapter at the U.S. Green Building Council. Could you tell us a little bit about what your role is?
Yes. I'm the chair of the Green Schools Committee. I'm a volunteer chair. All of our committee members are volunteers, and our mission is actually to help educate people about how schools could be healthier, better places to learn and teachers to teach in.
Great. So could you just unpack that a little further. What is a green school?
Well, we have a sort of a definition of a green school. It's a building or facility that is a healthy environment for learning, for teaching, which also happens to save money for the school district. It saves energy and saves resources.
Well, we know that's important in Michigan right now with all the debates over school budgets and all the different needs for our tax resources in this state. I think that seeing both the kind of financial bottom line and the health and educational bottom lines of the Green Schools movement is just a win-win-win for people here in Michigan. I wonder, though, if you could talk a little bit about some of the obstacles and challenges that you face with educating people on that and sort of rousing support both here at home and maybe on other scales.
Yeah, I think that people are starting to come around to the fact that sustainable buildings actually save money. It saves it on two accounts, both for the energy expenditures. You can save. There's many things that schools can do that are very easy to do, sometimes just with behavior modification, in order to be able to save some money on the utilities account. But it also saves money when you have a healthy place to teach in, because asthma is like the number one reason for children to be absent from school. 1 in 5 kids now has asthma, and if you have a school building that's unhealthy, that there's mold, there's dirt or unhealthy air system, then the kids tend to get sick, and if they are sick, then they're home from school and not learning. And the very same thing that causes the children to be sick also causes the teachers to be sick, and the second largest outlay for school districts is teacher salaries, so then they have to pay a substitute teacher. So a clean, healthy, comfortable place is both conducive to student performance, better performance, and also to reducing money on two fronts for school districts.
Wow, I had not really thought about the fact that it's like an occupational health issue or a workplace health issue as well as an education issue. But now that I hear you talk about it, that makes total sense. And I wonder, you know, in some ways that creates bridges to other industries that have foregrounded worker safety and made some real strides in terms of their corporate accountability measures and stuff. I mean, I wonder if there could be some dynamic cross-sectoral learning coming out of moves within school systems that have been made also in, you know, really different places like the aluminum industry. I think that's really an exciting way to frame it. And then at the same time, I would also say you're offering a chance for kids who may have those respiratory health risks and other risks at home to come away from a home environment where those risks can be debilitating and be in a safe space for a good part of their time. And we know from our work on environmental justice here at SNRE that asthma is unequally distributed in our cities. It is a bigger risk often to certain kinds of urban populations or people living in zones with light industry. So school can be a better haven too, I guess. What would you say to that?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, there's a story about a school on the south side of Chicago in a low-income district. And they built a new school according to LEED standards, a sustainable one with daylight, with less mold, with better acoustics, with better air quality. And at the end of the year, a parent came up to the principal and said, "I have a present for you." And she said, "Well, what's this?" And she said, "It's my child's inhaler. He had to use it 3 times a day in the old school, and the new school he has never had to use it."
What a great story. And I feel like this is a great segue to what Andrea mentioned earlier, the Green Apple Day of Service. I would love to hear, Peggy, you know, what the Green Apple Day of Service is, how you're involved, and potentially how other people can get involved.
Yeah. The Green Apple Day of Service started 3 years ago. This is our third year now. As a way for communities and neighborhoods to give back to their schools, to improve their school environments through service projects, through educational events, community events, and more. 3 years ago, we held a community green fair at one of the newer schools in Detroit and invited the community in to come see the new sustainable green school, and they were very impressed. And the kids got to show off their school. We had the architects train the students in giving tours of the building. We like to have educational events also. We've partnered with some of the farmers markets around town to hold the special events for kids to talk about healthy food and healthy eating. We've enlisted volunteers to help plant gardens or build greenhouses, or just clean up yards around places or plant trees. There was one school that had a fruit tree planting that was sponsored by a fruit roll-up company.
Oh.
So there's lots of things that are available for people to do to help their school become a healthier, better place.
That's great to hear. And one of my favorite things about the Green Apple Day of Service is that it's community-oriented. And one thing that we forget is how well-connected the education institutions, schools, are with their local communities. So this is just another example of a great way for community members to get involved with what's going on in their local schools. Peggy, when is the Green Apple Day of Service?
Well, the official day is the last Saturday of September. So for this year, it's September 27th.
Tomorrow.
But Green Apple projects can happen anytime within the month or the before or after. And some Green Apple projects turn into a continuous relationship with the school and their community that helps them all through the school year.
Great. Just so everyone knows, today's show is a Green Apple Day of Service registered project. So we are out there on the map.
Woo!
That's awesome.
All right.
Thank you.
Fantastic. Well, that might call for a little musical celebration. Okay. I don't know about you, but I think something school kids themselves might recognize. I'm thinking about maybe a little Bob Marley. My daughter started learning those songs in preschool, and they were a part of her education about both politics and music. So what do you say, DJ?
And anyone that wants to get involved in a project.
Thank you so much, Peggy. I hope you have...
Oh. What was that, Peggy?
I was saying that anyone that wants to get involved in a project can go to mygreenapple.org and put in their zip code and find a project near them if they'd like to volunteer.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
Thanks, Peggy.
Thank you so much, Peggy. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Bye.
One love. Travis, you want to take mine?
One love. Sinners who has hurt all mankind, just a savior's own belief.
One love.
What about a one arm?
One heart.
What about a
let's
love?
Get together and feel alright.
As it was in the beginning,
one love.
So shall it be in the end.
One heart.
Alright.
Give thanks and praise to the Lord.
And I will feel alright.
Let's get together and feel alright.
One more thing. Let's get together to fight this holy Armageddon.
WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, 88.3. On your dial, we have another caller, someone who heard that Bob Marley and decided to join the party. And I will say it's a big party today here in the studios at WCBN-FM. We have a whole lot of folks on the mic and not even enough headphones to go around. So bear with us as we navigate this conversation without all of us being able to hear everything. But it's a good sign that we have this many folks in the studio and some more folks on the phone. Danya, you want to set up our next caller?
Yeah, we have one of Peggy's colleagues at USGBC Detroit, Alessandra. Alessandra, are you there?
Yes, hi.
Hey, Alessandra, great to hear from you.
Great to be here.
Alessandra, so Peggy just talked about the importance of green schools, what they are, and why we should be talking about them today. But could you tell me a little bit about yourself and how you're involved in the green schools movement?
Sure. I am a board member of the U.S. Green Building Council Detroit Regional Chapter, but I've been involved in USGBC for many years and across many cities. So I originally joined in Seattle about 5 years ago, and I was the chair of the Emerging Professionals Committee there. Eventually, I became the chair of the Emerging Professionals National Committee. And then here in Detroit, I'm still involved with our Emerging Professionals or EP Committee, but also involved in different projects and especially willing to help with Green Schools and Peggy's work. So been around the block with USGBC.
Well, that's great to hear, and we're very glad to have you. Sure. So I know you mentioned, when you look on the map on mygreenapple.org, there are a lot of projects going on in Southeast Michigan. Could you talk a little bit about some of the projects that have already happened and some of the upcoming projects?
Sure. So I actually have the privilege of co-organizing a project earlier this month at Bunch Preparatory Academy, and that project featured and really was organized by a fellow weekend MBA student from Ross. So I actually just graduated from the Ross Business School this past May, and as a way of giving back to our community, and because we have so many excited students that are supporters of green schools and supporters of sustainable communities in Southeast Michigan, we decided to have our own project featuring U of M students in Detroit. And so our volunteers built a butterfly garden at Bunch. And, you know, with 20 people, we were able to do something that the science teacher who helped us organize the project mentioned that she had been trying to do for years. So really, in one afternoon, we were able to help a school in Detroit, and it was a really fulfilling experience. So that's one that happened.
That's great to hear, and it's exciting to see how students from U of M are getting involved. We're going to have a couple of guests talking about how students have been involved in schools and greening schools here in Ann Arbor and in the greater Detroit area. I know there's a couple of projects coming up, one tomorrow, I think. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Definitely. So tomorrow, on the official, I suppose, Green Apple Day of Service, we have a project at Lincoln Street Art Park in Detroit. This is hosted by Green Living Science, which is a recycling education nonprofit based out of Detroit, and it's kind of in conjunction with Recycle Here, our recycling center. And at Lincoln Street Art Park, we're going to have high school students and really any volunteer interested helping with maintenance projects and other small cleanup projects at Lincoln Street Art Park, which is totally based on found or recycled objects, and is really a source of pride for our community to show how we can create sustainable art. So it's going to be a lot of fun, and it'll start at 9:30 and go until about 1.
That's fantastic. That reminds me a lot of the Heidelberg Project, which is also a recycled art organization in Detroit. And we had
having trouble here.
Oh, sorry. Is the mic not working? Hello?
Hello.
Hi.
Alessandra, can you hear us?
Oh, there you are. Yep.
Okay.
Sorry. I think maybe my mic was a little bit on the faulty side. I was saying your project sounds wonderful, and it reminds me a lot of the Heidelberg Project, which
exactly.
works on, recycled art in Detroit, mm-hmm. and seems to have garnered just a lot of international attention with what they're doing. So mm-hmm. I've also heard from someone else that in general that recycled, that a lot of businesses are starting to come up with recycled materials in Detroit. So this just seems very timely and just really awesome.
Definitely. Yep.
Alessandra, we heard a little bit from Peggy, but I want to ask you, why you're involved, why you think this is important, why you think people should show up to Lincoln tomorrow.
I personally and professionally, I think that, really there's little that you can argue with when you think about the type of impact that Green Apple Day has across kinds of stakeholders in our community. So obviously our focus is on schools, and through schools we have the ability to touch students' lives, their parents' lives, school administrator and staff lives, and then clearly everyone who lives around the school, everyone who supports schools. So I think that Green Apple Day does an amazing job really bringing together a lot of different social and environmental causes that, people might want to support, anything from education and health to environmentalism. And so it's a wonderful way to bring together different kinds of people, but people who, have a passion for doing good in their communities, but also have a passion for leaving an impact or leaving a legacy that you can watch grow. So as the students contribute to this and their culture changes around how they think of sustainability and time, that can just, that'll spread to everyone else who enters their life. So it's a really wonderful way to draw attention to multiple causes, but an especially wonderful way to just watch how our impact will grow with these youth. So, and as I said professionally too, because, there's no shortage of ways that we can bring this. I work in sustainability, so I live, breathe, sleep sustainability at all times. So for me, there's no other way. It's a way of life. So
that's amazing. It's so great to live in this area where there are so many people who care and who want to get involved. I think, Alessandra, thank you so much. If you can just really quickly tell people, it might be too late to get involved this year, but what about next year?
Next year, it isn't too late to get involved. There are a lot of projects that are going on throughout the month of October as well. So if you visit mygreenapple.org, you can find a project near you. And actually, this radio show is also listed on mygreenapple.org.
That's right.
Today. Yeah, and so if you want to get involved in the near future, so for the rest of October or even tomorrow, you can just sign up online. But that website is active all year round, and you can check it out and learn more and be ready for next year.
Great. Thank you so much, Alessandra. We're going to move on to our next song by Jack Johnson and Ben Harper, all about volunteer work with my own two hands. Thank you so much, Alessandra, for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
I can change the world with my own two hands, make it a better place with my own two hands, make it a kinder place with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I can make peace on earth with my own two hands. I can clean up the earth with my own two hands. I can reach out to you with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I'm gonna make it a brighter place with my own two hands. I'm gonna make it a safer place with my own two hands. I'm gonna help the human race with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands, with my own, with my own two hands. I can hold you in my own two hands, and I can comfort you with my own two hands. But you got to use your own two hands, use your own, use your own two hands, use your own, use your own.
WCBN-FM Ann Arbor 88.3. It's hot in here, and it's hot outside. It's a beautiful day in Ann Arbor, and we've got a big group of people engaged in greening schools in our studio today. Let's keep talking about how schools are becoming more sustainably built and how that building happens from the ground up.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate the U.S. Green Building Council's effort in building a healthier and better environment in school. And on the other side, what happened in the classroom is really important, because schools are the base for us to raise awareness of environmental issues and protection. And a big party of them are the children and teenagers. So here we are joining by two guests, Jennifer Carmen and Travis Levity. Welcome. And so I know that you guys are working on designing programs and implement them to teach seventh graders about climate change. So can Jennifer give us a brief introduction of what you're doing, who is involved, and why is important?
Sure. And thanks for having us. This is actually, I don't want to overstate this role that Travis and I have. We're actually working on the project with Dr. Michelle Zint and Dr. Inessa Banez, who are researchers at SNRE. This is a project that teaches seventh graders about the effects of climate change on forests, and it actually teaches students how to build models of those effects based on research that Dr. Ibanez is doing. Dr. Zint, and so this is a cooperation between them. So Dr. Zint has worked on actually developing a curriculum for students that's based on this research and teaches them not only how to build models, but how to model real data that real scientists are doing. And so that's what we're... So it's not just teaching about the effects of climate change, it's teaching how scientists do science.
Wow, I think that building model even sound hard to me as a graduate student.
Yes.
So
I wish I was that seventh grader.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's not those kind of models. Like, when we think of models, we think of like global climate models and those like big, huge things. But this is actually scaled down for seventh graders. It's a start, and it's starting them to be in science and to make science, I think, not intimidating. It's actually just modeling the effects of precipitation and temperature And it's pretty simplified, but it is also the principles are still the same, that you learn how to make forecasts and that you learn the effects, how one thing affects another thing. Mm-hmm. But it's scaled down also to be something that's comprehensible for teenagers.
Yeah. So, Travis, I know you are mainly involved in the implementation of this project. So could you please tell us a little bit more about some specific strategies you use to engage the students and make it interesting for them?
Sure. So it's a 10-day life science-based curriculum, and this is entering our third year of piloting now. So we've learned quite a bit from the first 2 years about what works and what doesn't work. So one thing that we've done this year is been working with website developers to create an online version of the curriculum. So all of the materials, the PDF files, the lesson and instructional materials, homework worksheets are all available online to the teachers and to the students. And a really great thing is that the modeling tool that Jennifer was talking about, the online modeling tool where students measure tree growth and enter that data into the computer and generate models for how precipitation and temperature affect tree growth, that's also online so that students can enter the data and see the trend lines change in real time. So this is really a great way for them to see how scientists use data and practice with data in the real world.
Those kids are so lucky.
Yeah.
So are you saying that you, like in the classroom, the students will be using the computers?
Yeah, exactly. So the professional development that we do with teachers coming in January this year will really familiarize them with the online modeling tool and get them comfortable with it so that when students are actually using the tool in the classroom on the computers, the teachers will feel comfortable with the tool and they'll be able to explain to the students how to use the tool, what they're doing with the tool, what it shows, and why it's important. So yeah, the students in Ann Arbor Middle School, seventh graders specifically, but we're kind of scaling up the project now. We're widely distributing it online so it can be used really in any grade level in middle school, which it's designed for, really in any sort of temperate forest area. So while the data, like Jennifer mentioned, comes from Dr. Ibanez's research on forests in Michigan, it really holds true to any temperate forest in the Midwestern region.
Well, I think this is a really fantastic idea because talking about climate change is so abstract. Mm-hmm. And developing this online tools to help students to visualize actually what this looks like can really help engage them.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's wonderful because we've heard all about how the USGBC is actually working on greening sort of the exterior of the schools, right? And now you guys are bringing that into the schools. Let's just take a very short musical break before we dive a little bit more deeply into how, you know, exactly you guys are involved. This is actually a song that was found by Becca Baylor, who is doing a fantastic job learning the ropes as an audio engineer from Brandon. Brandon?
Woo!
Yes. So yeah, enjoy this short musical break. Baby genius, it's good to be green.
I love to play outside, pretending that I can fly.
Whee!
I run for hours and smell all the flowers under the big blue sky. But I've got a job to do, and it's really important too. When mom and dad ask, please take out the trash, I always recycle too.
It's good to be so green and keep the earth so nice and clean. It's good to be so green, it's good to be green.
The world is a special place, and we have to protect our space. And always take care of the water and air and nature we can't replace. The first part of the plan is to sort the jars and cans and set aside paper and plastic containers so they can be used again.
It's good to be so green and keep the earth so nice and clean. It's good to be so green, it's good to be green.
The world is a special place. We have to protect our space and always take care of the water and air and nature we can't replace. So we've got
to... So we just talk about the really useful online tools. So I'm really interested in what's happening in the implementation process in the classroom. Like, did you implement it in the classroom, or do you use like outdoor as another venue? Like, can you talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. So there are 8 lessons in this coming year. So the 8th lesson, which is about communication, takes 2 days. And then there's an experiential learning field trip as well. So most of the lesson takes place in the classroom, and teachers are prepared to go through the lesson. So they start out with basic information about tree growth, precipitation, and forests, and they transition to things like measuring tree cores and tree rings. They get an introduction to scientific models and the scientific modeling process. Then they actually go through the models, and then they kind of the students collaborate to come up with solutions to the data that they found and the problems, and then they're able to communicate those ideas. And then the field trip, which really can be implemented at any time during the 10-day curriculum, provides the students an opportunity to actually go into the field with their teachers and then a graduate student-led instructor and practice those skills that they've been learning about that scientists do, so measuring trees, doing coring, those kinds of activities.
And Travis, I'm curious, where have you been implementing this 10-day curriculum, and where's the field trip?
Sure. So the curriculum has been piloted for the last 3 years in the Ann Arbor Public School District. So in the middle schools, we started out with, I believe, two or three middle schools, Jennifer?
It was 5 teachers the first year in 4 middle schools. Last year, it was 6 teachers in 5 middle schools. And this year, we're actually working on planning to expand it to the entire district.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested in what's your guys' main observation of how students respond to this project and this process, and are they seem like excited or involved?
Well, this is my thesis research, and so this is getting into what we mean by the response, because there's what we're measuring is that cognitive response, their knowledge response, what they learn, and the fancy research term, and there's also the affective response, which is how interested are they and are they enjoying it. And so we're finding that their knowledge is increasing. Last year we found definite statistically significant increases from before and after. We also have been it's actually very interesting to study the effects of a curriculum on interest, particularly among teenagers, because as we all know about teenagers, they aren't really interested in anything. And so, or at least not anything that you tell them to be interested in. And so a lot of the research is actually teasing apart all of the things that affect their interest and what is, and particularly the relationship between interest in science and interest in particular science topics. And one of the thing that's actually been very interesting about studying climate change in particular as a topic has been studying what affects people's interest in climate change. Do we come at it from an angle of talking about risk? Do we come at it from an angle of just talking about pure science? And what we found so far is that looking at it from this more scientific inquiry angle is more effective and is more likely to get students is more likely to be to promote interest. There's a strong there's a stronger link between interest in science and interest in climate change. And
that's fascinating, mm-hmm. because I think with adults, if anything, it's, you know, we're being, us at the School of Natural Resources, we're discussing so much about how stay away from the science a lot of the time, right? So you want to generate interest without talking about the science. So it's so fascinating how the work that you guys are doing is really drawing out the differences, the generational differences and how we can approach this.
Well, sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was wanting to talk about if we want to dive into the science aspect, it's going to be a lot of to talk about. Mm-hmm. So could you guys just sum up 3 implications for future practices for teachers? What they should focus on, or what are some things that they can do to make their classes more interesting? Just 3 points, and we will introduce the music.
Okay.
Sure. So probably the first and main point is that teachers a lot of times don't feel comfortable teaching scientific-based material if they're not kind of knowledgeable in the area themselves. So one thing that we've really been doing with the curriculum and with the professional development sessions is really going through the curriculum step by step with the teachers, making sure that they feel comfortable teaching it, that they know the material, and that they can ask their questions ahead of time so that when they get into the classroom, they're teaching scientifically accurate material with the competence that they need so that the students can become engaged in it as well. So another, and then probably the second thing I would say to Pearl's question is that in the previous rounds of research for the field trip, we found that it maybe not be as scalable to increase the number of participants with a National Forest Service led field trip advisor, which is what we've been doing in the past. So this year, we're collaborating across the National Forest Service and with the teachers and graduate students in the Ann Arbor Public School District and University of Michigan so that they can all lead the field trips and kind of engage the students on a better basis.
Thank you so much, Jennifer and Travis, giving us a little bit more clue into what's going on in Ann Arbor and in the greater Detroit area. We're going to move on to our next song. Just a little break before we get our next guest on here. John Lee Hooker's Boogie Chillin'.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. Just waiting for that song.
Cannot wait for that song.
Oh, yeah.
WCBN-FM Ann Arbor, 88.3. And we've got some John Lee Hooker. It's hot in here.
Well, my mother allow me just to stay out all alone, all alone. Well, my mouth allow me just to stay out all alone. I didn't catch it alone. I was booking a hound. When I first come to town, people, I was walking down Hastings Street. Everybody talking about Henry Swing Club. I decided I'd drop in there that night. I got down. I said, yes, people, they was really having a ball. Yes, I know.
This is WCBN FM Ann Arbor, and we are It's Hot in Here. We've been talking about green schools, the actual building, and then the curriculum within. And to further that conversation, we have on the line with us Thomas Jubert. Thomas, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, did I say your last name correctly?
Yes, you did. Thomas
Great.
Jubert.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Thomas is, so I was connected with him because at the School of Natural Resources and Environment, we have a student group called Sustainability Without Borders. And they have been working on a really interesting initiative, creating a curriculum, and I'll let Thomas dig into that a little bit more. But Thomas is an officer with Sustainability Without Borders. And Thomas, you're a second grade teacher in Detroit. Did I get that right?
Correct, yes. I'm a second grade teacher in Detroit at this time, and I've been working in Detroit for the last 2 years.
That's wonderful. Where are you from Detroit?
I'm not. I grew up in St. Paul, Minnesota, but I moved to Detroit 2 years ago with the organization Teach for America, and I've been here since working in the same elementary school, Henry Ford Academy Elementary School.
Okay, that's fantastic. Can you just give us a little bit of a history? How did you get involved with Sustainability Without Borders, and then specifically with the Sustain Ed project?
So with Sustainability Without Borders, I actually met a few of the group members in a trip that we did to Liberia. And we worked alongside USAID in a project called eHealth. And we went over and we developed a curriculum for university students that emphasized STEAM education. And that's how we became connected. And then when we came back, we had discussed about how we wanted to develop a similar initiative but for students within the states. And since I was an elementary school teacher in Detroit, we figured that may as well use that as an avenue to begin this project in in Detroit, and it's been a huge success.
That's fantastic. And so STEAM stands for science, technology,
engineering, arts, and math.
Ah, that's right. I think it used to be STEM, and now the arts are also emphasized.
Right, they infuse that into it.
That's right. So what did you take away from your experience in Liberia that you're transferring, or that you have since transferred over to working in Detroit?
So the curriculum in Liberia is approached in a really hands-on manner. However, it was geared towards college students, so we had to reframe it quite a bit. But we wanted to keep that hands-on approach through learning through experiencing the curriculum. And we took that sort of a summer camp type of feeling and emphasis, and then we wanted to infuse that within an after-school program here in Detroit. So the students meet every Tuesday, Thursday for an hour, and then each month we have an experiential learning activity outside of the school where they go on a field trip. We've done field trips within Detroit as well as gone out to the Ann Arbor area and visited some buildings within the University of Michigan campus. So the emphasis is really bringing these topics into the classroom, allowing the students to manipulate them in a hands-on environment. We really want to try to get away from a more traditional focus of working through worksheets and pencils and papers, but having them manipulate them through different activities and problem-solving in groups. For example, making bridges out of popsicle sticks and then testing the amount of weight that those bridges could hold, or actually creating biomes within the classroom that would be a terrestrial biome and an aquatic biome, and having them create those, as well as making tangible inferences on how those two different ecosystems interact with each other.
Oh, that's fascinating.
And then doing applicable field trips outside of the classroom, too.
So what are some of the field trips, and are some of the hands-on activities involved with those field trips as well?
Sorry, could you repeat that question?
What are some of the field trips, and what are some of the activities that you do during those field trips?
Yeah, so when we went to the University of Michigan, they went to the Dana Building.
Oh, okay.
And, yes, and I was not able to attend that field trip, but when they were there, they were able to discuss how the Dana Building really integrated different sustainable practices, and how it was how it kept in mind different mechanisms to ensure that it was a sustainable building. They also went to the conservatory on campus, and they assisted in creating an aquaponic system that was really enriching for them. Additionally, within Detroit, we did a field trips to Eastern Market, and they were able to travel around the market, and we gave them the task of creating a nutritiously balanced diet and emphasizing buying locally produced goods.
So rather than having a worksheet, which I definitely recall from, I think, when I was in second or third grade, sort of having to maybe circle the vegetables, you actually took them to a market where they could pick out the vegetables and see it in action.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Yeah.
Just makes so much sense.
Yeah, and it was cool to see, because a lot of the students hadn't been exposed to such a wide array of foods either. So and hadn't been to the Eastern Market, which is such a staple in Detroit. And from what I've heard, the largest open air market in the U.S. So it's something that they should know within their community.
That's great. So it's also, you know, generating some pride in their hometown.
Right.
That's fantastic. So just out of curiosity, too, because I guess part of the problem for some schools engaging in these sorts of activities is funding. How is this a public school? How is it being funded, all of these trips and the activities?
So I work with a charter school organization.
Okay.
And the charter school, it really emphasizes that these extracurricular activities are very valuable to the students. And in doing that, it makes an after-school time slot available for teachers to create and facilitate the after-school programs. However, it is largely, the program is made possible through the University of Michigan and for the Center for Sustainable Systems, to be specific. And we're very grateful for their funding and their contribution to the organization. because that organization is what has allowed us to be able to bring these hands-on experiences into the classroom, allowed us to take these field trips into Detroit and to Ann Arbor. And I work with an excellent team of all University of Michigan graduate and undergraduate students with Sustainability Without Borders. And we all put in a lot of time and effort in order to create these incredible experiences for these students.
Yeah.
Within Detroit.
Well, go
so
Blue.
It is largely facilitated by Sustainability Without Borders and not the charter.
Before we close, just, you know, obviously this sounds really fantastic to me because I am, you know, a student at the School of Natural Resources and Environment, so I drink the Kool-Aid. But how are the, what are some of the reactions that you've seen from both the students and the teachers? I mean, you mentioned the teachers have, you know, like more resources and time to work on these things, but just what are some of the responses you've seen?
And also the
raw
community.
So we've done like an actual quantitative survey that we've been able to pull out some certain results and just from general observations as well. Students are really enthusiastic about the club. They come very excited about it. They come ready to engage in it, and it doesn't, and we have a lot of interest. We pitched the club last semester, the second semester into the school year, and we had a 30 student sign up for it, and they did a before and after survey, and just overall tremendous interest in the club, as well as wanting to continue on with the club. So this year we're expanding the program to include two teachers within the school, and we're hoping to cater to 60 students. And we're really excited about that. And from what we've gathered from parent feedback as well, they've mentioned about how their children, you know, express a wide array of interest in it. The parents are often able to come on the field trips as well, and they enjoy that aspect because they're being able to experience the learning process with their children.
Yeah, that's
weekend.
Huge, involving the parents. Yeah. That, I mean, just seems very, very holistic.
Yeah, we would like to even expand the opportunities further this upcoming year and try to do a full week, perhaps during the student spring break, to do a more extensive field trip. But that's still in the process of getting the funding together.
Okay, that's, well, good luck with that. Yeah, your program sounds great. I'm very proud as a Wolverine that such great initiatives are coming out of students here, out of alums. It's very inspiring, and we wish you the best.
Thank you. Thank you for having me come on.
Wonderful. So you have a wonderful weekend, and we're going to transition to Gino Washington, Out of This World.
Yeah! All right now, a one, a two, a one, two, three.
You really got something out of this world, and I'm out of
WCBN-FM Ann Arbor. It's hot in here. The mixed talk and music environment show with news and grooves. And not all bad news either, but good news from the front lines of a wide range of projects and initiatives that are working to make positive differences on the big issues of our time. Greening schools, climate change, these are on our docket today. This is Rebecca Harden from the School of Natural Resources and Environment. I'm in studio with our fabulous group of co-hosts, who include Andrea, Donya, Pearl, and Becca, who has just stepped out of the audio engineer booth and onto the mic. Welcome back into the studio on the mic,
Thank
Becca.
You.
You did so well, yeah, by the way.
Awesome. There's a lot of tech as well as a lot of talk involved in making a live radio show work, and especially one that wants to link happenings on campus to happenings in the community and wider worlds. I want to thank WCBN-FM for their long-term support for our using this space as a way to learn how to do that better and do it more and more interestingly over time. I've been so impressed by the way things have been developing. And I want to just wrap up. We're going to wrap up today with a little reminder that we heard from the U.S. Green Building Council, which is looking at infrastructure and health in schools. We've heard from initiatives in our own school, the School of Natural Resources and Environment, that are developing curricula on the impact of climate change on forests, curricula for middle schoolers here in the Ann Arbor School Districts. We've also heard from a member of our Sustainability Without Borders student group, who, from a traveling experience in Liberia, has come back home and developed more and better ways of teaching younger children, second graders, about the relationships between their life and various forms of biota and natural ecosystems. Fantastic stuff at all different levels and scales on the show today. So thank you for all our callers and for those who came into the studio, both Travis and Jen. We had great hosts on the mic and guests on the mic.
Yeah. Becca, you had an announcement to make about a very fun happening next weekend.
Yes, absolutely. So speaking of sustainability in schools, University of Michigan is having its third annual Harvest Festival hosted by Friends of the Campus Farm and the University of Michigan Sustainable Food Program. This coming Sunday, or two Sundays from now, on October 5th, from 1 to 5 p.m., there will be a lot of music, a lot of good locally sourced and sustainable food out at the campus farm. And for those of you who do not know, the campus farm is located at the Mathai Botanical Gardens. It is one of the only 100% entirely student-led organic farms, university organic farms in the country. So it's going to be a great opportunity to celebrate this year's harvest and a lot of the sustainable organizations, food-related organizations on U of M campus.
Fantastic. Good to hear about. And Nerd Nation members will know that there's a great roast going on tonight as well. Right on Main Street, we've got a goat from Sparrow, a pig from Black Oak, and a ton of vegetarian cuisine as well in the mix. And we would welcome not only environment students on this campus, but all our friends and allies in working to make this part of the world greener, cleaner, and more delicious.
That's right. The proceeds from the Great Roast are going to go to an organization that I think is going to be voted on as well during the Great Roast in Detroit. So it's for a great cause. And what better way to contribute to a great cause than to eat really delicious food, which, by the way, I spent my morning cooking up like 5 pounds of beans for the roast. So please do come out and enjoy them.
One more quick announcement. The University of Michigan Bees, the U of M Bees group, is having a meeting at about 3 p.m. by the flagpole on the Diag. Mm-hmm. I think the weather's going to be gorgeous. If you're a bee or a bee lover or you like your honey, turn out and learn more about what we're doing with pollinators in this community and why it's actually a lot of fun to be a part of that.
Yeah, I'm actually a UMB and there will be honey tasting at the event. So if you're interested in protecting, propagating, and promoting bees here in Michigan, come on, step on out.
Or just eating a little honey. I'm right, it's 3 p.m. at the flagpole, correct?
Yes, it is, in the Diag.
Yep. See you there.
One last announcement today, another event happening at 2 p.m. in the Dana Building in room 2024 if you're in the area. SNRE is situating the discussion within the environmental sciences. We are honored to host Dr. Benjamin Kuker, who will present a lecture on building diversity in the environmental sciences, lesson learned and the path ahead.
That is a fantastic topic right now, given that the NRDC has just hired its first one.